I'm Bob Franklin. Thanks very much for joining me. This is Like It Is. Will Shelton is president and CEO of Willpower Integrated Marketing. Will orchestrates a network of over 50,000 African-American salons and barbershops nationwide, creating authentic touchpoints that reach more than 30 million consumers annually and engage 15 million across social media. We'll talk about Will's company and the historical and cultural significance and evolution of Black barbers and their shops in the Black community.
My name is Will Shelton, and I am the CEO of Willpower Integrated Marketing. And actually, I got my start actually doing hair. Actually, I am a licensed cosmetologist and barber. And I started around 1994. So I had my own salon and barbershop for 10 years. So that's my background, how I got started. I feel like I was like a marketer disguised as a barber sometimes in the field. So, you know, in the salons and the barbershops, you know, you can get more out of somebody in 15 minutes than a therapist in 15 years. That's how close you become as client and stylist. So I began to understand the conversations we had, the conveyor belt of conversations, and began to understand that, you know, we were like the cultivators of the culture, and that helped the Black community flourish. So what I did was, because sometimes, you know, you hear music first in the shop, like some of those first records that you heard, you didn't even hear it in the car on the radio. You heard it on the system in the barbershop or salon. And that's how a lot of music took off. So a lot of clients would ask me, what song is that playing or what album? I would tell them. And then as soon as they leave, they would say, I'm going to go buy that album because I heard it here first. Or we talk about a movie and they would say, I'm going to go see the movie you recommended me. So I said, wait a minute, I'm helping organically the movie industry and the entertainment industry promote their projects through my shop. So I sent a letter to them. I sent a note. I said, hey, look, there's a demographic with an insatiable appetite for entertainment. And I think you guys need to connect with them on a deeper level. And I began to receive, probably within 30 days of that proposal I sent out, free CDs from the record labels and advanced screening passes from the movie studios. So that's my background. That's kind of how this started. That was the epiphany that I had in understanding what the Black barbershops and salons are to the Black community.
Well, I want to, that's great, because when I would go to the barbershop and back in the day, there would be a collection of seats. Everybody would be sitting around. You would have like two chairs, perhaps three barber chairs. Everybody would be waiting for their particular cut. You would be able to look on the walls and see what type of style you wanted the barbershop to cut your hair in. And it was a conversation piece. It's where we all went. We heard about sports. We talked about sports, what was going on campus, what was going on in the community. It was like a central meeting place. And I'm just curious to know that skill to get people to sit in your chair and to be, feel comfortable talking with you and sharing stuff with you, sometimes in front of many other guys sitting in there. How was that like?
Well, you know, to me, it almost felt almost like a ministry in a way, because I knew that when I went to the shop, I wasn't just, you know, uplifting somebody's roots of their hair. I was uplifting their spirit, because when people sit in your chair, you never know what they're going through. I mean, they share all kind of secrets and things with you that, you know, you're really uplifting their spirit. And I thought about that every time before I went to the shop, because I know they wanted a good hairstyle, but I know also as a relationship grew and people just sat in a chair, they weren't just letting their hair down, they were laying down their burdens to you. So I just started to think about it that way and really listen to people and really would communicate with them in a way where when they left my chair, not only could they lift their head up from the good haircut, but they would lift their head up because they felt better about themselves, or maybe they were inspired by something. Sometimes people will call me back later or text me and say, "Will, thank you so much for what you said to me today when I sat in that chair." So I really took it on with a purpose.
Well, politicians also have found, or later found, and presently know the power of barbershops. And some of the politicians, let's say back in Texas, where I came here from, they would drop by barbershops, drop off paraphernalia, and even sometimes come to barbershops to make political stump speeches and all of that to that particular certain clientele. Talk about if you've had that experience on the political side of politicians utilizing and understanding the power of and influence of barbershops.
Yeah, not directly, but I've talked to different shops that have been, you know, touched by the political part. Because, I mean, if you think about it, way back during the civil rights era and before that, and even into the 1800s, barbershops were like the trusted environment that it was black barbershops in church where you could talk about political things, and they became like town halls back in the day for information, distributing that so we can overcome things. It's one of those places where you didn't have to have the fear of public reprisal in the shop. So I not directly dealing with political politicians, but indirectly, and just those conversations that go on in the shops, because like they don't just shape hair, they shape the culture.
Well stated. Let's talk about, let's get a bit more into your launch, how you went from one to many, many, many connections in barbershops throughout the country. I was reading the press release. It says you orchestrate a network of over 50,000 African-American salons and barbershops nationwide with potentially over 30 million customers. So your vision to be the spirited entrepreneur to see the possibility, talk about that.
Yeah, just being behind the chair, I understood the consumer. I understood the brands that wanted loyalty, and understanding that how do you get loyalty? First, you have to gain respect. First, you have to gain trust in order to get to the loyalty. So, you know, I just started with my shop when I first did my outreach. And then I had another moment where I said, wait a minute, there's thousands of black barbershops and salons all over the country. This was in the mid 90s. So what I did was I said, I have to get a team together and build this network and connect with different markets, Houston, Dallas, DC, Atlanta. So I began to, you know, find out who were the networks that dealt with most of the shops in those areas. And over time, over years, I just built this network up to over 50,000 shops. And now what we do is we give brands unmatched access to the heart of the Black hair experience, which are the cultural institutions in the Black community. And the benefit is the cultural capital and the credibility in the beauty industry, me being a licensed cosmetologist and barber and shop owner for over 10 years. So I have the street cred to help these brands to integrate and to gain permission to get into these shops, which are the incubators of culture in the Black community. It is really became like a game changer because, you know, Black barbers and stylists, they're industry experts, but they fully understand how to bring the brands and the brand message into that environment, and they know how to speak to this audience in a culturally relevant, authentic way. So that's what I do. I help brands, and my vision was to help them get permission and gain admission into these sacred spaces to create culturally relevant campaigns that really feel authentic and that gain the respect. Because you really have to do that is I gain the respect and trust, because we're always looking under the hood. We know if it's just something you're just trying to do for Juneteenth or Black History Month.
We know what kind of goes on in the barbershop. The salons, there's differences other than you have, for the most part, ladies who are in the salon, men who are in the barbershops, and sometimes shops that have a combination of men and women. But talk about the cultural dynamics of the salons with respect to historical beginnings and culturally relevant today, moving forward into the future.
Yeah, well, I really think that the Black salons, as well as the barbershop, they're their original disruptors. They are who really pioneered marketing strategies before e-commerce giants like Amazon, before Mary Kay, before Avon. These establishments were the true pioneers on the street level of pyramid marketing strategies. If you think about it, on any given day, you know, you would have people, local vendors coming in selling chicken dinners, mixtapes, CDs, all of the above in the salons, you know, many of us have experienced that. A day in the salon can also empower us, revive us, to reconnect with our own people. You know, they're places of discussion that we've always had. So I think the salon really kind of set the tone from like going from hardship to entrepreneurship to stewardship.
And those are integral parts of the Black community for sure, because that's where all the news is transported and dissected, disseminated, and so forth. And you did mention, you know, product services. I can recall back in the day that my aunt, she was an Avon salesperson, and she would make her rounds, and she would stop in the salons and see, you know, what items she could sell to some of the captive audiences in the salons there.
Yeah, it's such a great place. I mean, like I said, it's what makes the Black communities flourish. Black lives mattered in Black salons and Black barbershops before even a Black Lives Matter movement. You know, it was central for civil rights. You know, they moonlighted as, you know, town halls. Some shops, I mean, I've done research and interviews where Black barbershops were part of the Underground Railroad, where they would let people on the run in, and they say, hey, you know, you can stay tonight, but you got to be gone in the morning. Those are the types of things that happened in shops. Even in the salon, the Black millionaire, first Black millionaire, I can't think of her name at this point. I'll bring her name back up, but she was the first one to make Black beauty products. And she made other Black women millionaires. And one of them, I don't know if you remember this, one of the great gospel songs called Precious Lord, written yes. by Thomas Dorsey, wrote that on the beauty campus of from one of Madam C.J. Walker's proteges. One of her mentees had started her own beauty campus that had dormitories, dorm rooms for college students and things like that. And it's known that Thomas Dorsey wrote the song Precious Lord on the beauty campus. So there's a lot of things that historical facts of salons. I mean, if you go back to some of the first barbers in the 1800s, former slaves. There's one named Peter Riggs who had a monopoly as the sole barber in Los Angeles. And from his success of high-end, he amassed considerable wealth. Even in the North, there was another guy from Cleveland, Ohio, and he was one of the big barbers in that area. I think his name was Henry Morgan. That was in 1934. He established Tyler Barber College, the first national chain of barber colleges of African Americans. And the colleges spread until nearly 80% of all barbers in America were trained at Morgan schools.
I wonder how many of our listeners knew that.
If that could be a movie on its own, it's so many highlights. These trailblazers in the Black community. That's why I love to highlight what the Black barbershops and Black salons have meant to us, to the culture, in so many ways. There's one more that was highly a guy named Alonzo Franklin Herndon. He was born a slave in 1858, and he became one of the first African American millionaires in the United States, first achieving success by owning and operating three large barbershops in the city that served prominently white men. And in 1905, he became the founder and president of what he built to be one of the United States' most well-known African American businesses, called the Atlanta Family Life Insurance Company.
Another point I wonder, do our listeners know? Very, very interesting points that you're making. And I should let our audience know again that I'm speaking with Will Shelton. He is the founder, CEO of Willpower Integrated Marketing. We're talking about the importance of barbershops, salons, and their impact historically and relevancy today. Will, talk about just you mentioned earlier just the popular culture of sorts when record companies would give you demos to I guess to play in your shop. But popular culture today, there was a popular movie back here a couple of years ago called Barbershop that I think had several noted well-known personalities to play. And I'm wondering, when we look at such a movie that talked about barbershop having the conversation that goes on in barbershop, how realistic, assuming you saw that particular movie, how significant is it the portrayal of barbershops that have been displayed in popular culture and popular music, if you care, popular movies, if you care to comment?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think they're probably 90% accurate. Some things are maybe a little bit more loosely based on how, but 90% they're accurate. I see them all. Even if you go all the way back to the original Coming to America with that those barbershops, Eddie Murphy. I mean,
Yes.
they cut up in there, but also, like I said, I mean, they're like unsung heroes in Black culture. They don't just shape hair, they shape identities one style at a time. They don't merely style, they sculpt resilience, they fortify spirits, they cultivate beauty in a world that often tries to deny Black people. I mean, it's it the barbershop and salon, the Black barbershop and salon, it encompasses so much of the world. I think it almost explains the world that we live in sometimes. In a microcosm, they don't just groom hair, they groom brand lift, they groom brand love, they groom so much in the shops.
And might I add and comment on this point, self-esteem as well, fortifying self-esteem.
Yep, self-esteem, high self-appraisal. Think about it like this. Sometimes, and you've probably watched boxing or sports like that, where your barber can become your corner man in your life for you. You have young, men that don't have fathers, they're barbers, and the other barbers there become father figures. I had a gentleman tell me he used to go to the shop with his mom, And he would sit at her feet while she got her hair done. And he would hear the other ladies talking about entrepreneurship, business. And he said he learned so much, you know, like as sharp as the razors that are in the shops, they keep you sharp in the mind, in your heart, in your spirit.
I'm curious, as you sit back and perhaps maybe take into perspective where you are today, what has fueled you, encouraged you, maintained you to keep on going, keep on dreaming, aspiring to be better today than tomorrow?
I think for me, it's adding value to people's lives, adding value to brands and businesses, and allowing them to understand how to navigate, how to uplift the Black culture. I think wanting to really live a life that outlives me eventually, to make a impact, you know, and have a purpose while I'm here. I think that's what really drives me in a deep way to continue the work that I do. In fact, we had just talked about the fires in here in California, and I'm actually mobilizing my network of shops to give free grooming services and pampering to the evacuees and the victims that have lost so much. And we're partnering with Procter and Gamble and some other brands that I work with in doing this.
That's great to know, and a service desperately and well needed for the victims of historical devastation of fires. As we get close to the end of our conversation, a very interesting conversation for me because I'm excited to find a little bit more about barbershops. I've always gone to one, but never ever thought about the historical significance of them being an integral cultural part of the community. And as we talk about it, Will, have you had an occasion or a conversation with a young barber, a young woman who is about to open a salon, that you've given him or her some encouraging words of encouragement to help them to undertake the endeavor of running their own personal shops?
Oh, sure. Many, many times. And I'll always offer advice when I'm talking to someone and I know what they're about to get into. One of my main things I talk about is business development, understanding your customer, understanding your target audience, not just because. I was able, this is what I tell them is don't miss what's missing. That's where the opportunity is. For me, it was seeing the barbershops beyond the chair as we were, you know, opening it up to consumers, to brands, and building this on a bigger scale and scaling it up. So I was able to not miss what's missing. So I tell them, don't miss what's missing. Find out what the real DNA of your service is. What are you offering? Not just what can you get out of the business or industry, what can the industry get out of you when you go home, when you really think about this, and really understanding, you know, just developing and scaling up your business and looking through it from a different lens, than what you normally would. Most of the time you get out of school or you're keyed up about doing hair, but you're not understanding the business side of it and how to really scale up and how to really service clients and have what I would say optimal service where clients come in and they feel appreciated, they feel like they're getting more out of this than you just doing their hair. So understanding how to serve people, how to be first class at what you're doing. Because going back, barbers, and I'll tell you this, I think I made a note of it. But back in the day, and this is a tidbit that your audience is gonna love. How did we get barber's license and cosmetology's license. That didn't exist before the late 1800s. There were no black barbershops or black salons. Black barbers service only white men. They were slaves, and their masters would outsource them to go cut hair to make money for them, and they had to buy their way out of slavery through barbering. So they started making so much money that the white man wanted to take over the industry. So that's when they told black barbers, from now on, you have to get a barber's license, but you have to have an eighth grade education to get a barber's license. What black person had an eighth grade education to get a license? So they weaponized licensing against us. But you know how we overcame that? We used that one unique characteristic, our race, and we made it into a business asset. Black barbers were able to fend off white competitors by preserving the artisan system and inventing first-class barbershops catering to the racial stereotypes of whites, because white men weren't servants like we were. So what we did is we had a cornerstone of black barbers, tradition, and enterprise, and we ensured decent prices for all through the system that took care of barbers from the moment that they entered the trade until death. So we possessed these skills that the white men didn't, and we were natural valets. We were natural hairdressers. It was natural for us to serve white clientele, and that skill reflected a devotion to their superiors. And black barbers were guaranteed this tenure and jobs because they use their race relations. They use what they dug into, their uniqueness, and overcame the weaponizing of licensing.
I am so glad you shared that information. I was going to ask for some take-home advice, but that is great take-home advice. There are so many positive messages and levels of inspiration that can be taken from that historical lesson that you just shared with the audience. My guest has been Will Shelton, President and CEO of Willpower Integrated Marketing. Will you come back sometime soon in the not too distant future and do a follow-up conversation with me?
Oh, for sure. I'd be happy to. Thank you for having me on today.
My guest today has been Will Shelton, President and CEO of Willpower Integrated Marketing. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.